Southeast Asia was the historic stage of dramatic battles between the Allied forces and the Japanese during World War II. Warships from the Netherlands, England, Australia, as well as the US and Japan, are now the resting places of thousands of soldiers who lost their lives.
There's a lot of reverence for the men of war who died on the wreck.
Most of the fallen soldiers in these war graves have lain in peace for more than 75 years. Until now.
I didn't really recognize it as a bomb, but as I went further down, there were a lot of wires running all over the place. Then it occurred to me that, oh my God, they've been blasting the wrecks.
Global headlines declared it the world's biggest grave robbery.
This is stealing the underwater heritage.
Kalau lagi ngebersihin, ditemukan ada bekas tulang-tulang, ada tengkorak, segala macam.
An investigation is launched to uncover who destroyed the underwater war graves and why. At Brondong Port, on the east coast of Java, Indonesia, scrap metal workers dismantle a decommissioned vessel. Not far from here, beginning in 2016, local police launch an investigation into ongoing reports of human remains. The bones were reportedly found in metal scraps that had been salvaged from a shipwreck. The events grabbed the attention of local journalist Akwam Hanifan.
Banyak kabar berhembus bahwa kemana besi ini gitu. Kemudian atasan saya meminta saya untuk melakukan reportase ke datang ke Jawa Timur untuk menginvestigasi apa sih sebetulnya yang terjadi di Surabaya.
A Dutch shipwreck dating to World War II is believed to be the source of the human remains.
Nah, dari Google Earth itu saya bisa tahu bahwa dalam waktu antara 2014 sampai 2017 awal bahwa lokasi ini memang jadi salah satu dumping area untuk memotong besi-besi bangkai kapal yang diambil dari Laut Jawa.
Coastal communities on Java and surrounding islands have been fishing and scavenging these seas for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Taking small valuables and scraps of metal from old shipwrecks is itself an age-old tradition. But this case appears to be something entirely different. One of Akwam's contacts provides a video clip, apparently from the mobile phone of an unnamed scrapyard worker.
Kalau misalkan kita lihat video dari salah seorang pekerja yang bekerja di sini, kita kan bisa melihat bahwa ada banyak sekali puing-puing yang dikumpulkan di area sini. Ketika saya ngobrol, diketahuilah informasi bahwa ternyata yang mengambil kapal bangkai kapal itu ternyata bukan mereka, tapi diambil oleh satu perusahaan besar dengan teknologi yang sangat tidak lazim dilakukan di Indonesia, dan teknologi ini tidak semua orang mempunyai itu gitu.
The battle of the Java Sea unfolded in the waters just off the shores of Brondong. On 27th of February 1942, a coalition of Allied ships waged a fierce battle against the Japanese Imperial forces. In all, the Allies would lose at least 8 battleships, one of the worst naval defeats of the war. Among those that were lost from the British fleet, the HMS Electra and the HMS Exeter. And from the Dutch Navy, the HNLMS Java, De Ruyter, and Courtenay. All went down with heavy casualties.
the scrap metal from these Dutch shipwrecks, that there were human remains in the scrap metal, that there was a smell of charred flesh as they were cutting through it. This is what the local Indonesian workers were reporting. And it was widely reported in the media, and of course it caused international outrage and condemnation, particularly in the Netherlands.
Dr. Natalie Pearson has been studying the controversial salvage of World War II shipwrecks for years. She has been closely monitoring the situation in Brondong.
What they wanted to find out was they wanted to investigate the source of the removal, who'd done this and why. They also wanted to determine whether these allegations of human remains in the scrap metal were legitimate.
The legal status of shipwrecks far out to sea is loaded with complexity. For any investigation, the first challenge is determining whether or not a crime has even been committed.
So in 1942, when the Battle of the Java Sea took place, Indonesia was still a Dutch colony. It was the Dutch East Indies, and there was very limited legislation pertaining to cultural heritage, let alone underwater cultural heritage. But ultimately, it's a matter for the Indonesian authorities to determine whether a crime has been committed.
Akwam's goal is to help authorities determine whether or not a crime has been committed through his own investigation. He's meeting with scrap iron workers and their family members to find out if they know about the origins of the scrap metal. Knowledge of the salvage operations appears to be widespread in the community.
Jadi kita sekarang datang ke rumahnya salah satu pekerja di area pengumpulan besi bekas itu. Tugasnya dia jadi untuk motong-motongin besi. Sehat, Mas.
Oke, Mas.
Aduh, alhamdulillah. Mas, dirimu masih megang itu nggak, Mas, yang...
Iya, masih.
Boleh saya lihat? Oke, bisa saya lihat. Mas, maaf. Banyak juga, Mas, ya?
Iya.
Ini ada yang lihat nggak, Mas? Sebut segini aja. Dulu dapetin ini di mana, Mas?
Waktu kita belah kapal dulu yang di Brondong itu.
Kapal. Mas ingat nggak, Mas, kapal-kapalnya, Mas? Yang ini ngebelah apa
yang
gitu?
Ini ngebelah kapal. Ada kapal perang kan? Waktu kapal perang kan kita cuma apa tahu itu kapal perang kan ada kayak gini, ada peluru, terus ada semacam meriam, ada terus rudal kayak gitu, rudal-rudal gitu besar-besar itu kan. Kalau yang ini sama juga. Ini kayaknya kapal perang.
Oke. Ini kapal perang juga.
Seingat saya sih. Kan nempelnya di apa? Di kayak tank, kayak apa? Kayak tangki tapi tebal, enggak tahu apa itu.
The identification of a box lends weight to the man's claim. It could have been a sailor's personal footlocker or military trunk.
Ada pok-poknya gitu.
Pok kayu itu?
Pok kayak besi. Cuma ini kan ngumpul kan. Ngumpul ada yang besar, ada yang kecil. Ada yang segede segini kan. Bulatnya segini.
Landrum ini kamar ya, bahasa... Apa, Mas? Kamar ya, landrum aja ya? Bahasa Belanda.
Banyak hampir 50 orang gak salahnya. Kan ada bagian-bagian kan. Ada yang pemborong. Ada 3 pemborong kan waktu itu. Kalau truk besar sekitar ada 3 atau 4 ya. Kalau si kecil-kecil ya banyak. Kecil-kecil itu sekitar ada 8 atau 10 ya.
Sehari?
Iya.
Non-stop itu?
Non-stop.
Banyak banget berarti besinya ya?
Banyak. Kan sampai gunung kan waktu itu. Banyak, Bang.
Ini sangat penting soalnya karena si pegawai ini dia yang ada di lokasi dumping area. Jadi fungsinya vital sekali, vital dalam artian dia tahu betul jenis besi, terus apa aja yang diambil, apakah itu dari kapal kargo, kapal perang atau apapun itu.
As more witnesses come forward, Akwam finds one man who claims he saw the human remains and knows exactly what took place.
Itu kerjaan saya ya cuma ngawasi aja, terus habis itu nyediain logistik buat pekerja-pekerjanya. Itu setahu saya diambilnya dari tengah laut, pakai nggak tahu apa namanya itu kapal yang ada besinya gitu untuk ngambil. Terus sebetulnya macam-macam itu barang bangkai-bangkai kapalnya itu kayaknya macam-macam, cuma itu kayak ditemukan ada beberapa mirip dengan kayak meriam. Terus habis itu ada juga yang ada ini loh, apa mas, plakat-plakatnya itu ada tulisan-tulisannya pakai bahasa asing yang nggak tahu itu bahasa apa, bahasa Inggris, bahasa Belanda atau bahasa mana, aku nggak tahu.
It's the best testimony so far that Akwam has, pointing directly to illicit work being done on the war graves. But the questions remain. What happened to the bones that were found? And which company or salvage vessel is to blame?
Kalau lagi ngebersihin atau mengangkat itu, bekas yang diangkat-angkat itu, ya ditemukan ada juga yang ditemukan ada bekas tulang-tulang, ada tengkorak, segala macam.
Entire shipwrecks have been disappearing from the ocean floor across Southeast Asia. A wave of illicit scrap metal salvage is regarded as the largest known incident of war grave robbery in history. Countless war graves have been destroyed in an atrocity that is believed to be ongoing. Dave Yu is a seasoned deep-sea diver and explorer of many Southeast Asian shipwrecks. Over the years, Dave has witnessed firsthand the ongoing destruction of historical shipwrecks on the seafloor.
The thing about shipwrecks is the attraction to the history of it, where this wreck came from, especially if it's a war wreck. Right, from World War I, World War II, there's a lot of reverence for the men of war who died on the wreck if it was a war grave. Human remains, we see them, we don't touch them.
Dave's knowledge of the shipwrecks north of Singapore shows just how widespread this problem has become.
I grew up in the east of Singapore, and I exhausted a lot of the kinds of fishing. It was my family's hobby. In my teen years, I was already diving.
Intensive training and experience has placed Dave among a rare breed of technical divers who use unique gas mixtures to go deeper for longer. And the many hours he has spent exploring World War II shipwrecks hold a unique place in his heart.
Diving the wrecks was just pure ecstasy for me. Every dive, I can't even recall how many dives I did on the Repulse and the Prince of Wales, and the amount of things that I saw, you know, the historical value of this wreck, and just trying to imagine what life was on board when she was in commission. But now all that is gone.
December 10th, 1941. Two huge British battle cruisers, the HMS Prince of Wales and the HMS Repulse, are sent north of Singapore into battle. After narrowly avoiding the Japanese Navy, the ships are spotted by a plane. And soon, a force of 85 twin-engine bombers launch wave after wave of attacks, with the final strikes coming from torpedoes. It was the first time a modern warship moving at high speed was sunk from air attack alone. ...840 officers lost their lives aboard the two ships, while more than 2,000 managed to narrowly escape. Since then, the shipwrecks have become international attractions for highly trained deep-sea divers and are revered war graves.
The HMS Repulse and the Prince of Wales, these are the two wrecks that I visited very, very often over two decades of wreck diving.
Dave noticed something unusual on a trip he organized in 2013 to dive the HMS Repulse.
During that particular trip, when I ventured off to the stern of the Repulse, I realized that one of her propellers, we were talking about a huge propeller bigger than the size of a bus, is missing, you know? She's gone. They used to see the small time salvages and they just dive off for scrap metal, but this is, you know, something else altogether. And then over the years, we saw more and more of this. We even saw the actual boats that were doing the demolition before the actual salvage barges came by to pick up the pieces.
This was carefully planned, large-scale targeting of huge warships reaching 250 meters in length. There was more than enough steel to keep the operation going for years.
The salvagers, they had a standard pattern. They will send a fishing boat, a trawler, quite heavy-duty trawler, that could actually take heavy weather. We've seen them jump off.
According to Dave, the salvage divers use surface-supplied air hoses designed for deep-water industrial work rather than scuba tanks. The shallowest point of the Repulse sits 50 meters down, or 150 feet, like taking an elevator 13 floors underwater. At this depth, an untrained diver is risking his life every time he enters the sea.
They will send us one or maybe two divers down, and then you can see the diver goes down and starts to plant all the charges. And we found wires running all the way up to the surface. So they would do all the planning of the positioning of the charges. They run this cheap telephone kind of wire all the way up to the surface, and then they charge it from the surface. The first time that I actually saw charges on wrecks, which is the HMS Repulse, I didn't really recognize it as a bomb, because all we saw was maybe a used can of some kind of processed food. It was covered up, you know, with the fertilizer mix and everything inside. But as I went further down, there were a lot of wires running all over the place. Then it occurred to me that, oh my God, they've been blasting the wrecks.
The divers must leave the water prior to detonation.
You can't charge it when the diver's in the water. The diver would die, right? Because of the explosion and the impact, the sonic impact.
Next, a barge with a crane would replace the trawler, and the crew brings up the pieces one by one. In the case of the Repulse, after the propellers were removed, the salvagers began targeting specific areas of the ship's hull.
When we were on the Repulse once, I remember very, very clearly we were on the decompression bar just below the boat, and suddenly there was this loud boom and I could feel it in my chest. And I thought something on the deck had exploded because we have mixed gases on board, and I was really worried. And there are two other divers with me. Everybody was just, you know, going through their time to get their decompression obligations done, and then we started our surface. I just looked at each other, and I was like, you know, one of the other chaps was a little bit older, so I was worried that, you know, it would have impacted him. Because that kind of impact can actually stop your heart. It felt like it was really close by.
The suspicion at the time was that the salvagers had moved to the Prince of Wales, just 8 nautical miles away, where they continued blasting.
When they blast open the hull is to access the engines. Especially with the HMS Repulse, she was upside down, so where the cooling intakes were, they'll drop all the charges and they'll just blast everything out. So the rack will open up, her belly will open up, and they will have some more charges around to open up further so that they can hoist up the engine. And then within months, the other parts started disappearing as well. It was devastating. It's really devastating.
It's difficult to estimate how much of the Prince of Wales and the Repulse remains. Many years have passed since a reliable survey has been conducted.
We can compare the destruction of these World War II shipwrecks to a bulldozer ripping through the earth. But because this destruction is taking place underwater, hidden beneath the waves, we haven't seen the sustained, widespread level of outcry that we would if something like this were happening on land.
Investigative journalist Akram Hanifan has collected testimony that gets him reaching out to law enforcement once again.
Kalau lagi ngebersihin atau mengangkat itu bekas yang diangkat-angkat itu ya ditemukan ada juga yang ditemukan ada bekas tulang-tulang, ada tengkorak segala macam, sebagian itu dibuang lagi ke laut. Nah, tapi sebagian itu ya ada yang dikumpulin terus dibawa ke pemakaman di desa Sedayu Lalas ini, di pemakaman Soko itu. Ya udah ditaruh dimakamin di situ.
Akwam has been sharing his information with the police from the start of his investigation. He follows up with a local official who prefers to be anonymous.
Menurut pengakuan Mas Agus ya, gitu. Itu memang tulang. Tapi kan indikasinya tulang apa kan? Nggak tahu karena apa itu kan bagi kapal yang sebelah, setiap itu kan ada.
Akwam is disappointed to hear that the police investigation has already wrapped up after a forensics team visited the Suko Cemetery.
Pada waktu diambil itu ya, ya kita ngomong-ngomong sama anggota-anggota gitu. Itu kemungkinan nggak tulak manusia, tulak hewan. Karena kecil. Kecil, segini loh. Segini loh tulangnya segini. Kecil. Segini kecil.
Tulang hewan warna apa mas?
Nah, di situ kan banyak toh, kadang-kadang ada anjing, ada enggak ada anjing, ada apa anjing pun namanya kucing yang meninggal di situ kan lama, kali ada orang dikubur di situ kan bisa juga.
The official result is that the remains recovered by investigators were from animals. Akwam does not appear to be convinced.
Tapi tulang berarti sampai sekarang tulangnya nggak ketemu kan?
Nggak ketemu. Karena gini deh, kemungkinan gini. Aku kemungkinan itu kalau dia tahu titiknya, ya kemungkinan. Nah, titiknya kan lupa.
Wah, susah crowded sih. Soalnya kan juga kalau misalkan mau identifikasi juga di sini pasti tercampur sama tulang belulang lain gitu kan. Setelah laporan investigasi saya naik, sebetulnya kan pihak pemerintah kan langsung mengirim tim untuk mengambil sampel di pemakaman tersebut. Tapi hasil sampel tersebut menyatakan bahwa itu sebagai tulang hewan. Menurut saya itu yang sangat mengganjal karena nggak logis sekali gitu kalau misalkan bukan culture di Indonesia mengkubur tulang hewan di pemakaman manusia. Gitu.
So the conclusion of this investigation was that these were likely to actually be animal remains. Having said that, of course, with the removal of the shipwrecks from the seabed floor, The human remains of all those sailors who lost their lives in the Battle of the Java Sea have been disturbed, and that is something that we can't walk away from. It is very upsetting for the survivors and the descendants of those battles. Whether or not they're in Brondong is another question.
Illicit scrap metal operations have been removing historical shipwrecks from the seafloor across Southeast Asia, and in the process, destroying thousands of war graves. Marine archaeologists in Sydney believe the reason is tied directly to the atom bomb.
These relatively modern ships, this large-scale salvage hasn't occurred on this scale ever. And it's a good question about why they're doing this salvage now. There has been discussion that the metals on these vessels were sunk prior to the atmospheric testing of atomic and hydrogen bombs in the late 1940s.
Since the testing and detonation of the nuclear bombs, the entire planet has been contaminated with trace amounts of radiation, known as fallout. As a result, all steel created after World War II has been slightly radioactive.
With these historic shipwrecks that are pre-bomb, so they sank before the first atomic explosion, the metal that they were forged with, of course, doesn't have that background radiation, doesn't have that radiation contamination. And metals that don't have that contamination are incredibly valuable because they can be used in sensitive equipment, so things like Geiger counters, photonics, aeronautical instruments, equipment that might be used in clean rooms or in space, for example. It's high value, and it's rare now because of all the radiation that's in the atmosphere. So one theory that we have is that these shipwreck sites might be targeted for that because they are a resource for that. And it makes more sense because otherwise, why would you go to the trouble to do it?
These metals have been shielded by the ocean from taking on radioactive isotopes. So there is a high value for the scrap steel, the scrap iron, if I can call it that, on the seabed. Far more than what you would normally get for normal scrap steel and iron.
The Perth was a 170-metre long jewel of the Australian Navy, but was sunk by Japanese forces off the coast of Western Java, about 6 kilometres offshore.
Yeah. What's that broken patch on the side, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dr. Hostey and Dr. Hunter know HMAS Perth extremely well.
We were given permission to dive on HMAS Perth in May 2017. 30 metres of water, but it has a lot of current on the site. And when we got down onto the seabed, onto the wreck itself, we realised that Perth had been absolutely devastated by this salvage operation.
We realised immediately that something was very wrong. It didn't look like the photos and the footage we had seen of the wreck prior to the salvage. There was a lot of twisted metal, nothing recognizable, no turrets, no superstructure, none of the things that we would have expected to encounter on this warship.
Using sonar research tools and over the course of numerous dives, the team of local and international marine archaeologists estimate that 60% of the once enormous ship is now gone.
This was salvage on a huge scale. This was conducted by a commercial diving operation. They would have had commercial divers or very well sophisticated divers operating on the site. They would have used crane barges. They would have used all this sort of material to extract over 4,000 tons of HMAS Perth from the seabed, a massive undertaking.
Nia Ridwan is a marine archaeologist and head of a government research program that is taking stock of the damage done by salvagers across Indonesia. She's also become an expert in the legalities and sees a clear path to prosecution for the culprits.
Untuk status legal bangkai kapal perang masa Perang Dunia II, secara hukum itu dilindungi. Jadi kita di Indonesia mempunyai beberapa peraturan legislasi gitu ya, baik dulu yang sudah dikeluarkan, ada undang-undang cagar budaya, itu nomor 11 tahun 2010, itu jelas kalau bangkai kapal perang itu masuk ke dalam objek yang dilindungi. Meskipun banyak gitu ya, kalau kita melihat di lapangan itu banyak masyarakat maupun pemerintah itu menanyakan ke kami, Bu, kenapa sih itu bangkai kapal perang harus dilindungi, apalagi itu dari negara lain gitu ya, bukan punya kita sendiri. Jadi berdasarkan pengamatan kami di lapangan, karena kebetulan kita di badan riset, jadi ketika kita datang ke satu titik lokasi itu tidak pernah ada yang utuh, jadi itu pasti bekas dijarah.
At the other end of Java, investigative journalist Akram Hanifan continues his search for the company responsible for disturbing human remains from historical shipwrecks.
Ada yang kerja di situ dalam.
He's interviewed dozens of locals, including a key eyewitness to the destruction of a Dutch Navy ship from World War II.
Itu kapal yang buat ngambil bangkai-bangkai kapal itu yang di tengah laut itu ya itu. Gede loh mas. Kapalnya itu ya tulisannya itu berapa ada tulisannya. Iya, pian kalau nggak salah itu Pioneer 88. Ya.
With the ship's name finally revealed, Akram is able to trace the ownership of the vessel to a locally owned company. He tracks down their headquarters and attempts to speak with the registered owner. He decides to record the conversation with a hidden camera for his own protection.
Masih, Mas. Mas, ini kantor PT Jatim Perkasa ya, betul? Mas, saya bisa ngobrol nggak sama masnya atau siapa itu? Ya, mau ngobrol-ngobrol sedikit. Kalau Mr. Lin ada? Oh, nggak di sini dia? Sepi sini ya? Pada WE,
ini bagian operasional.
Oh,
memang lagi proyeknya kan lagi di luar Jawa, di Batam sama Makassar.
Lin, Mr. Lin jarang sini?
Ya.
Pak bosnya? Ya, Mas. Saya tunggu sini.
Akram's attempts to find the head of the company have failed. He shares his findings regularly with the police in the hopes of a deeper investigation. Akram follows up with an investigator who prefers to be anonymous.
Halo, selamat siang. Pak Ngurah, apa kabar, Pak?
Baik, Mas.
Udah lama kita nggak...
Apa sehat, Mas?
Alhamdulillah. Pak Ngurah, Pak, aku pengen tanya dong, Pak, sedikit aja. Yang soal kasus dulu kita tanganin tuh loh, Pak, yang kita ngobrol-ngobrol itu, Pak, yang soal PT Jatim Perkasa itu ada update-nya nggak sih, Pak?
Saya nggak bisa... Karena tidak bisa dibuktikan dia melakukan pelanggaran, ya waktu itu kita hentikan.
Oke. Okay.
Proses lidiknya, karena apa? Barang temuan itu tidak ada seperti apa baju-baju sebesar itu nggak ada. Didukung dengan berita acara hasil pengangkatan itu.
Okay.
Terus titik koordinat juga berbeda.
Okay.
Jadi kita bicarakan fakta di lapangan waktu itu, Mas.
Any company running marine salvage operations in Indonesia requires permits. Akram manages to get a copy of the Pioneer 88's permits.
Perbedaan TKP istilahnya itu.
Okay.
Dari situ kita nyimpulkan bahwa kegiatan yang PT Jatim Perkasa itu bukan di tempat lokasi kapal itu, kan gitu. Jadi nggak bisa kita tarik benang merah bahwa dia pelakunya, karena tidak cukup bukti kan waktu itu. Jadi kita juga tidak berani menyalahkan orang kalau belum ada bukti kuat kan gitu. Jadi kata kunci Mas Ikhwan,
kenapa?
Karena beda koordinat, saya nggak bisa nyimpulkan bahwa dia pelakuan gitu. Itu aja kan.
Ini adalah izin yang dikeluarkan dari pemerintah untuk Pioneer 88 tahun 2015. Lokasinya cukup dekat dengan HMS Electra yang bangkainya sekarang sama sekali tidak tersisa. Yang kedua, kalau misalkan kita melihat surat-surat izin perintah kerja yang dikeluarkan oleh Kementerian Perhubungan, hampir kebanyakan izin-izin yang diberikan kepada kapal Pioneer 88 ini tidak mencantumkan koordinat. Nah, jadi kita bisa lihat bahwa khususnya untuk Pioneer 88 oleh mereka tidak dijelaskan koordinat mana sebetulnya bangkai kapal apa saja yang harus diambil.
Could this distinct lack of detail in the permit be interpreted as a blank slate to salvage any ship in the area?
Ya, tentu saja sih itu akan menjadi dalih mereka untuk mengambil bangkai kapal yang tidak mestinya mereka ambil. Dan pengakuan si nelayan mengatakan bahwa ketika mereka beroperasi itu, terkadang mereka beroperasi di luar titik koordinat izin yang mereka dapatkan. Kadang mereka bekerja di luar, kadang bergeser, mungkin bergeser cukup jauh dari alur itu. Gitu.
On April 20th, 2017, things start to change for the metal salvage operators. The Indonesian Navy announces that a ship called the Tuan Hong 68 has been detained for suspected illicit salvage. Headlines declared it the world's biggest grave robbery. Dozens of World War II shipwrecks have gone missing from the sea floor in Southeast Asia. In May 2017, Indonesian police issue an arrest warrant for the Tuan Hong 68, suspected of illicit metal salvage of warships. The 120-meter barge escapes Indonesian authorities and flees to Malaysia, where the entire crew is placed under arrest.
Kami akan melanjutkan proses hukum terhadap kapal Tuan Hong 68 melalui koordinasi dengan Bapak Kapolri dan Bapak Kepala Staf TNI Angkatan Laut.
Jadi terkait dengan penjarahan bangkai kapal oleh kapal-kapal besar gitu ya, seperti Tuan Hong, kemudian Pioneer 88, itu saya kira tidak hanya di perairan Indonesia saja. Jadi saya kira mereka beroperasi tidak hanya di Indonesia saja, tapi juga di perairan Asia Tenggara. Karena seperti kita tahu gitu ya, di masa Perang Dunia itu dua itu kan tidak hanya Indonesia, tapi ada Malaysia, Filipina, kemudian Vietnam.
The Tuan Hong 68 is suspected of destroying at least a half dozen historical shipwrecks, including three Japanese wrecks, the Kokusei Maru, the Higane Maru, and Hiyori Maru. The Japanese imperial ships were sunk in 1944.
That shipwreck is a very familiar place for my family. I mean, my father, my mom. We go fishing every weekend. So, and then we will do some dive over there.
Scuba diver and conservationist Monica Chin was notified by friends that something was happening at a beloved dive site. They sent her a video of an anchored barge working above the shipwreck.
Kerja-kerja, orang belum berhenti, masih dalam progres. Masih lagi menjalankan aktiviti mereka.
And on that day, it's very sad. I call all my friends in the hometown and try to find out, is this true? is this ship is there? And then they took pictures to me, and then the story burst out. So I was really pissed off.
Evidence shows the work was done under permit and in partnership with a local university.
I have the copy of the letter from the University Sabah, Malaysia, from one of the university in Borneo. So they said they're actually doing the research. They got the approval from museum department in Kota Kinabalu. So they got the support letter from the marine team department as well. We all know that this is not a research. This is stealing the underwater heritage.
The extraordinary biodiversity of these Japanese wrecks drew tourists from around the world.
It should be protected, that all the underwater shipwreck around Borneo, Sabah water should be protected under the historical underwater heritage.
Today, more than 95% of those ships are considered gone. Dozens of crewmen lost their lives here, their final resting place salvaged for scrap metal. A short while after being apprehended at sea, the Chuan Hong 68 disappears from Malaysian custody.
Nah, seperti yang di Perth juga sudah ditangkap, dilepaskan lagi, ternyata ketika ditelusuri, pihak-pihak yang menangkapnya waktu itu mengatakan bahwa benda ini belum ditetapkan sebagai cagar budaya. Nah, ini yang mereka belum aware. Nah, begitu juga masyarakatnya, penjarahnya, kemudian para aparat hukum maupun pemerintah daerah juga masih banyak yang belum mengetahui di situ, kalau saya kira.
The illegal salvage of these vessels is speeding up, and it was certainly very large between 2013 and 2019. And I think it was driven by the growing demand for these metals around the world. The prices of copper, the prices of brass, bronze, all these non-ferrous metals were going through the roof. There's a huge demand for them.
In all, at least 49 historical shipwrecks have been identified as damaged or entirely removed, potentially affecting thousands of gravesites. Hundreds more are suspected of being damaged or are considered vulnerable.
Well, let's say that's your grandfather or your father or your uncle, and that's their remains, and they get hosed out of some scrap metal, then put in a bag and dumped somewhere, I'd be pretty upset. And I think the people who are upset about this have every reason to feel that way. And those remains need to be accorded respect, and they need to be interred. They need to be reburied in a way that's respectful.
Singaporean Dave Yu also feels the pain of these historical losses. A technical diver specializing in deep water, Dave has spent many years exploring the relics with an eye towards the HMS Repulse.
The Repulse, beautiful, with so much marine life that made the wreck their home. Watching her slowly getting bits and pieces eaten up by the salvagers was just heartbreaking. As a Singaporean, I knew that the men of war who died on this wreck, they fought for our freedom during the war. And we couldn't do anything to preserve their final and resting place. You know, it's just unthinkable to say that the governments couldn't try harder to, you know, preserve these two graves.
Indonesian journalist Akram Hanifan's investigation into human remains found at a scrapyard has led him to a dead end. But his research has shown that there was a network of salvagers relying on local labor, targeting warships, and disturbing the graves of countless soldiers.
Perusahaan yang melakukan hal ini masih tetap bisa beroperasi, dan bahkan kapal-kapalnya pun masih tetap mendapat proyek dari pemerintah. Saya pikir polisi harus bersikap tegas, deh. Bersikap tegas dalam artian menelusuri, kalau bisa sih menindak pelaku-pelaku ini.
For Nia Ridwan, a lead researcher with the Indonesian Ministry of Marine Affairs and Fisheries, there remains much work to do across the archipelago to set things right.
Kita sebagai manusia gitu ya, secara sisi humanisnya kita juga harus menghormati gitu ya. Bisa kita bayangkan kalau kerabat kita juga meninggal di negara lain, kemudian kuburannya juga dijarah atau apa, kan itu pasti menyakitkan hati. Ini yang perlu kita juga tanamkan gitu ya kepada mereka gitu. Ada rising awareness yang harus kita tonjolkan saat ini. Meskipun itu bangkai kapalnya adalah milik entah itu Belanda, Jepang, Jerman, kemudian Amerika, Australia, Inggris gitu ya, itu tetap harus kita lindungi.
I would suggest that Indonesia has been unfairly accused of failing to protect and preserve these sites. Ultimately, the vessels were in these waters to defend colonial interests, and there has been limited cooperation over the past 75 years between the allied countries that were involved and Indonesia.
Since the discovery of this large-scale salvaging in 2016, a new push for greater protection of shipwrecks is finally paying off. New legislation has been approved, focused on some, but not all known war graves.
The Kawasan Konservasi Maritim was announced in February 2018 to coincide with the anniversary of HMAS Perth sinking. It's Indonesia's first maritime conservation zone, so it's very significant that that's been established around Perth. And it provides for a core zone of about a hectare that seeks to protect not just the wreck, but the marine ecosystems around it.
The conservation zone also brings hope that other shipwrecks will be recognized as proper war graves here and around the world, to honor and to remember more clearly what has been hidden beneath the waves for more than 75 years.
We can't ignore the ocean or what's in it just because it's out of sight, out of mind, hidden beneath the waves, because the ocean is the world's greatest museum.